episode of Spling Yourself. Today we have an extra special treat, the return of our best and very favorite guest, Josh Neuer. For those of you who haven't heard any of Josh's previous episodes, he's a father, a husband, a rock and roll dude, and our favorite licensed counselor. Josh, thanks for coming back, homie.
Thank you very much.
Whoop whoop. Josh, so good to have you back, man. So we had Josh to the house, the Diddy Bread house, a few weeks ago, and we did try to record an episode.
Well, we did.
And we failed. But we had a great conversation, and we asked Josh back to kind of recreate that conversation, only we're going to kick it up like a few notches. This one's going to go to 11.
And there's not going to be a lot of explanations.
There's
a lot of egg recipes and discussion.
Yeah,
of how
I was,
you eat eggs.
I was cooking in the background. There was a lot going on in that episode. So our topic then, and then our topic again now, and we have an article that Josh wrote, like between then and now, which is fantastic. Our topic is self-acceptance, which is huge. Obviously, everyone is affected by this at some point, and probably there are folks that deal with it very palpably on a daily basis. So we're going to talk about self-acceptance, and we're going to talk about how imposter syndrome interferes with that, and that's a topic that came up kind of naturally in our last conversation with Josh. Josh, can you quickly give like a loose definition of imposter syndrome?
Sure. It is interesting because the article came largely from our conversation,
yeah,
which I thought was really cool, the spilling over there. Yeah, I mean, it can be as light as somebody doubting their accomplishment, having this internal fear of being exposed as a fraud, to a heavy-laden anxiety of being completely exposed and found out. It can create a little bit of a conspiracy with self-doubt.
Whoa, conspiracy. This is heavy stuff.
Yeah, and super unpleasant. The thing with imposter syndrome and why I think it resonates with all of our listeners is we've all had this. You've had this, right, Diddy Bro?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I didn't know that was the name for it until probably a couple of years ago. I think I've experienced it on several occasions, but you know, when you start a new job, that's a time when it's definitely going to come up,
mm-hmm,
or you're trying something for the first time. You know, we have this pressure, I think, to appear like we're competent in everything,
right,
all the time, right?
Right?
And if we're not going to let anybody know, right?
That's right.
So that's when that imposter syndrome starts creeping in. But when I feel it, and I'm feeling it right now because I'm starting a new job this year, and I'm going to be teaching things that I haven't taught in several years, and it's creeping up, but you know, I think because my experience in the past has been pretty positive with new things and different things in my job, you know, I think back and I'm like, all right, when you were faced with this feeling before, thinking that, you know, soon everyone's going to find out that you don't know what you're doing,
right?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But then I think my pride kicks in and then I'm like, no, but I do know what I'm doing. Or I can fake like I know what I'm doing and nobody's going to know and it's going to be fine. So I'm able to suppress the imposter syndrome pretty quickly. In fact, that kind of means that I'm not really suffering from imposter syndrome.
No, it sounds like a very mild case of it.
Right. So that's my experience with it. I know you have a different experience with
it.
Yes. Yeah.
This was a major milestone in the graduate career of all of the graduate students in which we all sort of dealt collectively of my cohort, was there was a point in graduate school where they would give us our own class.
Okay.
And it was like, you have been here for 2 years, you get your own class, and you realize, oh fudge, I'm a college professor now,
yep,
but I'm not done with my graduate program, and I'm not sure I know what I'm doing, and there's nobody there to help you.
Right.
So we would all sit around before, it was everybody had this point in their career where eventually they were just pushing you out of the nest.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would all have this sense of imposter syndrome. It would also happen at academic conferences,
Oh. Which
is where you would stand up in front of a group of people often who had finished graduate school, in some cases had many years of experience or who are like famous in the field, and you would present yourself as an expert.
Yeah.
And you're going like, all right,
yeah,
I'm going to go up there, and then these people who are actually experts are going to be there. And what if they start asking me questions I don't know?
Right.
This could ruin my whole career.
That's right. Heavy.
It is heavy. But it also never happens.
Right. The worst fear, it never comes to fruition.
Right.
Yeah.
And the worst thing that happens in the setting of a classroom is a student asks you a question.
Yeah.
And you say, I don't know.
Right.
But that's a good question.
Which is great for students hear that from their teachers.
And then you know what my crazy solution was, Josh?
What's that?
I would look it up.
I'll Google it.
And then I would get back to them.
That's right.
That was my crazy answer to that problem.
So I think and this is just a theory, but coming from a world where I've been trained to educate, you know, K through 12, basically, like, we get a lot of teaching training. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering if, like, for college professors, you guys don't get a lot of teaching training.
I got literally zero.
Zero. So that's probably part of it. It's like, you know all mm-hmm. the stuff about your content area, but now you have to teach, which is a completely different mm-hmm. skill set, you know?
Yes.
So...
Yes.
But you developed some pretty solid teaching strategies, because I've seen you teach and you're darn good at
well,
it.
Well, thank you. But and the thing I ultimately came to realize is that the kids in the class don't care nearly as much as you do.
That's exactly right.
What they wanted was a 75 and to go on their way.
That's right.
So
well, yours did. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, if you yeah. were if you like got the date wrong of like the Bacon's Rebellion.
Right. They don't care.
They don't care. So it just wasn't that big of a deal.
Right.
Or they'd be
right.
like, oh, you were 2 years off. And you'd be like, oh, yeah, I was 2 years off.
My bad.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
And then life would just go on.
So you did get alleviation from your imposter syndrome.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the thing was, after, like, the second year when you started teaching, you never really stopped. So,
right.
like, maybe you felt it the first semester or the first year, but then I assume that most people dealt with it and understood that they could, you know, after a couple
right.
of successful semesters, they would do it.
Right.
I do have friends who are very great scholars and great teachers who still say that they get very nervous even before class
oh.
now that they've taught. So I think
yeah.
for some folks,
mm-hmm. perpetual
this is just sort of how
syndrome.
They're wired.
Yeah.
Even though these people have unbelievable credentials, you
right.
know, these are some, the people I've been lucky enough to run into are some of the leading scholars in the world on this
yeah.
kind of stuff. So for them to say, like, I feel nervous for class, to me, I'm like, no, you don't.
You
couldn't possibly.
You don't believe them.
Like,
yeah.
you know, I read your book.
Yeah.
That was outstanding.
Right.
Like, and there are all these awards.
They literally
and
wrote the book on the subject.
Right.
And they can't, like, stand in front of kids and talk
yeah.
to them.
And
yeah.
And they're like, oh, I'm nervous to talk to a bunch of undergraduates.
Right.
And I'm like, what's going on here? But at the same time.
Because it's a different thing.
Yeah. You know, it's unfair for me to put my expectations onto them.
That's very true. And it's hard to understand if you're not struggling with something, you know. Sometimes empathy is tough with this kind of thing. But this is one of the questions I want Josh to get into is, you know, we both talked about imposter syndrome in terms of our jobs. And I'm sure that there are many other areas in your life where you can feel like an imposter, like as a spouse or a parent, you know. And since self-acceptance is our topic, I'm going to let you talk about a little bit about what you kind of outlined in your article. And this article is amazing, and you can find it on Josh's website. It's joshneuer.com. That's Josh Neuer, and Neuer is spelled N-E-U-E-R.com. Josh, talk to us a little bit, man.
So I think it's very natural and quite normal the way you're describing. I'm starting a new job, the way you're describing this. I'm being launched out in front of
mm-hmm.
my peers and those that I've now apparently advanced. And I'm supposed to give back. That's totally natural. That's normal. I think that's healthy. You've hit a wall at that point, and all of a sudden, the mirror's turned on you, and you're sort of questioning, can I do this? Am I able to do this? What am I made of? All that stuff is good. That's going to develop perseverance and grit and et cetera. The concern, and where the article comes in, is, you know, your latter point of, what about these accomplished people who clearly have surpassed the understanding of whether or not I think that they're capable or not? But now they have this thing that gnaws at them. And really, it's the fear of failure. So that's where, you know, what drives the paralyzing fear of failure or perfectionism or the imposter syndrome, whatever you want to call it, the Superman or Savior complex, all that, I believe it's shame. And
mm.
so and we're finally starting to talk about shame. Mm. You know, Brené Brown is a big proponent of talking
oh,
through
yeah.
shame. And then she'll say that what sets people free of shame is vulnerability. And I think that's great. I agree. However, shame is prevalent in our culture through, you know, media. You talked about parenting. Some of that is shaming ourselves with comments about ourselves or other parents. I see parents do this about teachers, about the way they do or don't handle things with their children. And it's just kind of a shame fest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes common to think, oh, I screwed up, so therefore I must be a dot, dot, dot.
Oh, like labeling.
Yeah, a whole lot of, yeah. And
yeah.
And you're having to kind of pull yourself up. But really, the article kind of talks about exposing the shame, making ourselves vulnerable, sharing the concerns that we have instead of stuffing them down and internalizing them further, getting help from someone outside of ourselves. Now, this is great, right? Because I can talk about tools to do that, but I think that's only half-baked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I've been thinking about. I got this awesome quote that I want to read from Gerald May. And because, you know, right now this is the self-care hotline these days, man. It's all about self-care, and I love self-care. I'm all about self-care. However, that in and of itself is half-baked, because we can't control every situation that happens to us as much as we can. You know, we're not going to figure it all out. He says the entire process of self-development can be very exciting and entertaining. But the problem is there's no end to it. The fantasy is that if one heads in the right direction and just works hard enough to learn new things and grows enough and gets actualized, one will be there. None of us is quite certain exactly where there is, but obviously has something to do with resting.
Mm.
So there's a little humor at the end there. But I like it because it exposes this thing of, and I understand it's good, we motivate ourselves, we push ourselves, those are good factors, but there's nothing in there about self-acceptance.
Ooh.
There's nothing in there about who I am, not minimizing my problems or my needs, but rather grieving them, dealing with them, healing from them, and becoming more whole. That's where the article comes in. That's where I think counseling comes in and getting help.
Right.
So you think like, yeah, growth is super positive and you should be doing these things, but if you're always growing, you don't take time to sort of validate who you are and be comfortable with who you are.
I think you'll see it in a conversation. Mm-hmm. So you walk by somebody, hey, how are you? I'm good. And then somebody says, oh, I'm just dealing with this thing right now. But you know what? It's not a big deal. Or somebody else says, hey, you know what?
We're kind of flipping about it. Fine.
Yeah. I had a conversation. I went over to the grocery store and I ran into somebody I hadn't seen in a while. And I made a comment. And I said, well, oh, you know what? That's a first world problem. About what I said. Because I tend to minimize my things, not others. And he said, hey, man, first world problems are still real problems.
That's true.
And I was like, oh, I felt like an after school special. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
oh, right.
They are, the more aren't you they? Know. And then I through you know, facing this, I realized, gosh, I do minimize my things, and I don't really want to deal with it because it hurts.
Yeah,
it stings to deal with your pain, but to deal with it is often to heal from it, as opposed to, well, let me just set another goal, let me just reach this other milestone, let me find more success here. And you know, some of the most successful people are often the most miserable people internally.
That's true.
Or
that's true.
If nothing else, lonely people.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I, you know, I'm thinking about small talk, like just in passing when you're just catching up with somebody. I don't know that it would make a whole lot of sense to try and be vulnerable in all of those situations. You know what I mean?
That's
like
exactly
sometimes
right.
just to be polite,
right,
and not burden somebody with your problems, you'll say things like, "Yeah, you know, it's fine. Everything's fine."
Right.
You know, it's not a big deal that my car got broken into on Thursday, which it did. But I think a point that you made in your article is that you should have community. Like, you don't have to see every single person as someone that you're going to be vulnerable with. I don't think that's healthy.
No.
But we do have people in our lives, like, you know, a church group that you meet with, mm-hmm. or somebody that you can talk to on a regular basis where you do unload those things, you know, and you talk about like, yeah, this is a real issue. It's causing us some problems. Like we're, you
That's
know,
right.
I'm really struggling through
That's
this
right.
thing.
If you can count on one, you know, on one hand, the amount of people, if you can get it up to 3, 4, or 5, that's great.
Yeah.
But, you know, oftentimes I'll meet people who, you know, one at best.
Yeah.
And they don't want to burden that one person.
Right.
Right.
Everybody has something going on, but that's the beauty of it is we're all in this together. We're all learning together. We're all failing together. And once you level that playing field, all of a sudden it becomes acceptable to be accepted. You know, when you receive love from other people, all of a sudden you realize I am lovable.
Right.
So that's the other side of the coin that just, I feel like it expounds upon self-care, and it allows a person to actually grow in from within, not just, you know, to, I had this thought. So, you know, I take care of myself. I've been taking care of myself for a long time. And I went to go see my aunt in Florida. Went for 5 days, just me, not my family or my kids. And it was awesome. My aunt takes such good care of me. And I realized I like being taken care of.
Yeah.
This feels really good. She made me breakfast. My uncle won't let me pay for the movie. He takes me to the movie theater.
That's awesome.
And I realized this is good for me. And how often am I not allowing people to help me? Not allowing people to care well for me? I think we have a harder time receiving love than we do loving others. But we, it's so flipped in our culture. It's all about kindness and empathy, and I'm all for these things. But until you can receive that love, I think we're just, it's just a self-perpetuating problem,
right,
of covering shame. But look at me on the outside. I'm a nice person.
Right.
Right. And I think a lot of time people get the idea of accepting love from others, and especially in the form of compliments.
Mm.
There are many people that I hear who they don't accept compliments.
Mm-hmm. Self-deprecating all the time.
Or you don't accept compliments because you think passing them by or right. like pushing them aside is a right. sign of humility.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to get it. Josh mentions this in his article as well. So, and this is a definition of humility that I think C.S. Lewis uses in one of his books, and mm-hmm. I really like it a lot. But you point this out in your article. But the definition of humility that we need to be using is thinking of ourselves less versus thinking less of ourselves.
That's right.
And that's really easy to remember. But you're right, Michael. We have a tendency, and I don't know if it's cultural or if it's something on the soul level, but we have a tendency to think that if somebody's complimenting us or if, you know, there's something good that we've done, that we have to downplay that mm-hmm. as much as
right.
possible.
Well, I think sometimes we get the idea that compliments are bragging on our behalf.
Right.
Right. So if I, let's just say the four of us in this room, we run a race, a foot race, and I win, and Josh comes to me and says, "Hey man, you're a really fast runner." That's true.
Compared to us two.
Yeah. Like,
right.
Like, and my opinion doesn't lack humility to say, like, okay, thank you.
Yeah. And we talked about that last time Josh uh-huh. was here, the idea that, like, it's really freeing to just, you know, be able to say thank you when somebody says something nice to you or about you.
Right. And I think my inclination would be like, oh, I'm really not running.
Oh,
like,
pshaw.
Yeah, I don't really know how to run that fast.
Right.
But, like, now I've just gone out of the way to put myself down.
Yeah.
And then I've created an awkward situation with Josh when a simple, like, thank you, and internalizing that, like, yeah, you're not going to be an Olympic track right. star, but for a portly 4-year-old, that was pretty good.
Right.
Just take that and move on with life.
Right.
You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the thank you does that part of the definition of humility that says think of yourself less. Mm-hmm. I think the thank you does that because it's yes. quick, and now we're moving on to something else.
And I think there are some, like, this is a phrase I'm going to make up and it's going to sound horrible, some spiritual nutrients in accepting and complimenting.
Oh, I like that phrase.
It may kind of stink, but I just
want to know. What do you think? Mrs. Blum is in the studio. Yes. What do you think about that phrase? Spiritual nutrients.
I'm on board.
She's on board.
Okay, yeah. So I take it back. It's really good.
but accept the compliment.
Yeah, so, thank you, dear.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, this is so meta right now.
That's right. but that it's good for you to hear good things from other people about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because maybe that's not part of your self-talk, you know?
That's right.
And maybe it becomes part of your self-talk
right.
when you... And it's another reason to give compliments, you know? Like,
sure.
not frivolously.
Right.
But,
sincerely.
Yeah.
But, like, if you're going to be self-actualized, you should also realize that there are good parts of you as well.
That's exactly right.
Right? If all you do is you say, like, oh, I'm horrible at this. It may be true you are horrible at that.
Right.
But for everything you're horrible at, you're probably good at something as
sure.
well.
Sure, right.
So you should, if you want to be, like, really understanding of yourself and actualized,
right.
then you should be aware of both of these things, I think.
And I think there's a lot of spirituality in there if you want to talk about, you know, God's image, and you could get deep into that. But thoughts, Josh?
I think it's great. I think the key word there is, like, receiving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody's giving you something, a gift, in the form of either a tangible gift or an encouraging word. And I think that's your immediate baseline is how do you respond initially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you downplay it, if you tuck it away as if it, I don't, you know, there's a host of reasons why somebody does that. But to your point, you know, even looking at it spiritually through the eyes of being created and being beloved and realizing that you are loved, and all of the ways that you are loved are as a gift. I love the analogy of a child. That child, that baby, does nothing to earn the right of love. They didn't graduate high school yet. They didn't get a great high paying job.
They haven't even made like a fun Mother's Day card.
They're running the show.
Done nothing. Yeah.
And causing a whole lot of strife going on in that house.
Right.
Yeah.
And they are utterly loved. And then at some point we get old enough in our performance based world where we're like, oh, okay, I can manipulate these odds.
Exactly.
I can do this and gain favor with you.
Exactly.
And that's the danger.
Yeah, it's super dangerous. And I'm just thinking about like the times that I am resistant to compliments and positive feedback sometimes. And I don't think mine comes from a place of self-loathing at all, even though it's possible that that's true for some people. I think it's the exact opposite for me. I think I am prideful, and in an effort to hide my pride from people, you know, it's that fake humility.
Right, like, right, the false humility.
Right. Like, let me try to mask this and it be really obvious to everyone that that's what I'm doing.
So you're thinking like, yeah, cuz I'm a real fast runner.
Well, yeah, if you win that race, you're already feeling good about yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you do something good, like I did a drawing over the weekend at the beach for my niece, and it was of her teddy bear, and it was pretty good. I hadn't drawn anything in a while, and I was like, oh, junk, this is not bad. And she gave me a compliment on it. My sister did, Jerry did, and like I was just like, yeah, I feel good about this, thanks for but I also kind of did the thing where I was like, oh, I'm not that good, like I wish I were as good an artist as this person or that person. And I have people in mind, you know, but it's so weird. It's so weird.
Well, it's funny. We all know Harrison Brookie, of course.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
We love Harrison. So Harrison, I sat down with him and we started talking about compliments and encouragement and those that wish to receive more compliments. He made a great point. You know, he runs an improv comedy, does a great job with that. And in that comedy and improv, he has, you know, basically their task was to receive a compliment. And so somebody was trying to flaunt their hair and try to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And finally they realized, as soon as they gave a compliment, they received a compliment in return.
Oh, wow.
So to be complimentary
is
to receive a compliment in return. And I think that is, by design, I think that's the way it works. You know, once you receive something, you're so much more willing to give something in return.
That's true.
And I don't mean in a, you know, obligatory way.
No, I owe you now kind of thing.
You know, you said back to spiritually, you said, you know, we love because God first loved us.
That's right. There's that order.
Or love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then love your neighbor as yourself. I think that there's a process to this. It's not just, let me will myself and self-actualize to this great place.
Right.
That is maybe fantasy land.
But I
think a lot of people are making money off of fantasy land.
Oh, you got it.
So that's where I think, you know, let's talk about shame, a core issue. Let's look at vulnerability, a release. And let's look at what we can do with this in our community.
Right.
You mean I shouldn't pay $49.95 for a DVD that shows me that the universe is all energy that I've constructed? But people are making money off of that? Pops up on my YouTube all the time. It's like, do you know that your world is just energy that you create?
Ugh, that sounds like a bunch of nonsense.
I'm like, this is the most woo-woo crap I've ever seen.
It's also very egocentric.
Yeah.
So we've kind of talked about strategies. Is there anything else you would advise someone who feels like they're dealing with imposter syndrome like pretty heavily on a daily basis? Or just the idea of like, I'm having trouble with self-acceptance. What are some practical, like, here's something you can start today?
Yeah. I think it's important to be honest. Now, like I said, that doesn't mean you don't put it on social media.
Ooh.
You don't blast it to the world.
That's a really good point.
You also don't need to go do a TED talk about it, okay? Just headline. You can find somebody you trust that you believe loves you and has your best interest at heart and tell them what your fear is.
Mm.
And you are afraid you're not very good. I just actually, I walked with a teacher from point A to point B today at a school. And just coming over the course of the summer, she's about to start teaching again. And she said she has this pit in her stomach because she feels like she forgot how to teach over the summer.
Huh.
And I said, that's so interesting you say that. You know, I bet that, you know, I hear from students all the time that that's how they feel over the course of the summer. They don't want more school in the summer.
Right.
But at the same time, they feel like they're now not going to be as good at it because I took some time.
Right.
And, you know, taking time is a great thing to do. And maybe not being in your same game is a good thing too. You have fresh perspective,
right?
But also not dismissing her feeling and saying, "Oh yeah. gosh, that's a real feeling."
Yeah.
And you know, obviously, once she starts again, she might be pleasantly surprised that actually I do know how to do this again.
It's riding a bike, man. Yep.
But that's what I would say. I'd say first being honest with yourself.
Sure.
Then sharing that and being honest with somebody else that you trust, and then building. You know, really building what it looks like when it happens. What's the trigger?
Yeah.
You know, is something. There are some people that feed off of this stuff because of their own shame. We've worked with somebody like this in the past. We worked at a couple jobs, so you won't be able to figure out. But this person loved to undermine. If you know anybody who's a micromanager, you know that they undermine.
Yeah.
And they will feed out on your insecurities in the workplace. And that's the perfect storm for the one who doubts their own accomplishments and the one who comes in and likes to receive a superior foothold, if you will. That is such an injustice in my mind, because you have such exploitation and manipulation of shame.
Yeah.
Initially, the bully, if you will, their shame, and then the person who's just insecure or self-conscious, their shame.
Right.
And shame really is, it's awesome that we're dealing with it now, and we're truly dealing with it, not just stuffing it and not just making light of it.
Right, and pretending like we're not dealing with it. Michael, how do you deal with self-acceptance issues? Do you have like a mantra that you use?
Yeah, and this is, I actually sort of played this out. What episode was that where we discussed turning 40?
Oh, yeah, countdown to 40. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that what I've determined for myself is I have to be okay with where I am.
Yep.
And just say, like, you're doing the best you can.
Yeah.
Right. The thing I had to come to grasp this was my ego.
Mm.
Right. And we actually, and this is the only time it's ever happened, we've been doing this for close to 2 years now, is we were going to do an episode about Sarah and I turning 40. And I came in on one Friday. I was like, can't do it, Chief.
Wow.
Yeah. He was not in the headspace.
I was like, I don't have it today.
Yeah.
Like, because I felt so, I had such shame about 40 and what that entailed, and I like 2 days later I was like, okay, A, the problem here is ego, and B, the problem is I'm not allowing myself to be vulnerable, right? So I was like, you know what, we're doing the podcast.
Yeah, I'm proud of you. Good job.
And it was great. If you haven't listened to that one, folks, you should go back and listen to it. It's good stuff.
I feel like you squarely faced it.
I did.
And you're able to see it for what it was. That's really good.
Right. And then, because when we do the podcast, it's actually different, right? Like, the thing that's always weird to me about doing a podcast is I look in this room and I see that there are four of my favorite people, and that's all I try and think about. There are these things that record our voices.
We could pretend they're not even
right,
here.
Right, and I try and pretend they're not here. So I was like, I'm going to go talk to Diddy Bread about this. Most people don't play this stuff out in a medium that's available to the whole world. So that sort of made an interesting dynamic about it. But once we had the hour, I deal with it a lot better.
Yeah. That's really great. Yeah.
I think that conversation was helpful for both of us. Like, it helped me articulate some of my worry. And I think we had the same problem, and it was just manifesting itself differently.
Right.
Like, by 40, we wanted to have these things. And his things were more like accomplishments, like, you know, his career accomplishments. And mine were more like personal health kind of goals. But it's the same root problem there, you know.
Right.
And it's this manufactured benchmark that we think we have to be ready for, you know. But I think you're right in the fact that people don't have this medium in which to flesh all this out. But I think, and this is from personal experience too, I'll admit that I don't use the resources that I have at my fingertips often enough to talk through, you know, my fears, my self-doubts. Like, Jerry and I are with each other all the time, and we don't even have the distraction of kids, and yet, you know, we can waste hours in front of the TV, and we're both sitting there separately feeling all these things, and we're just like, yeah, well, I'm just going to go deal with it on my own, you know.
Right.
So I would encourage anybody listening, if you've got somebody, you know, like a spouse or a best friend, and I don't know how you broach this, maybe you have some advice on this, Josh, but if you're not in the habit of having these conversations with this person, even though you might be really close with this person, you know, it can be hard to start. So
yes, well, I think journaling, I'm gonna go there first. I'm gonna say journaling is a great method. I mean, you are literally taking it from your mind and taking it and putting it somewhere externally. That doesn't hurt anybody. No, it doesn't burden anybody. You know, all the excuses we come up with,
right?
It's just moving your hand around, or maybe two hands if you're typing, And I think that's pretty powerful. And some people end up writing songs or music poetry. And some people will do like spoken word. I mean, there's a lot that comes from it, but you don't have to go that far. Some people write a letter to people. To start a conversation and to confide with somebody that you're already in a relationship with and to sort of confess your needs, if you will, I think that's a healthy, intimate part of any relationship. I think that you can start off by saying, you know, I'd like to share something with you, and I don't have any expectation about what you're going to say in response. I just thought it'd be really nice to be able to tell you what I'm thinking at the moment and say it.
Okay.
And say,
don't have any expectation. Actually, don't have any.
Yeah. This is one of those moments where you give without expecting a return.
Right. Right.
And then I would second that at the end and say, again, you don't have to say anything. If you want to say something, you can.
Right.
And that really frees the other person to feel, first of all, they don't feel like they're confronted at that moment and shutting down. They actually would say, okay, well, thanks for giving me the permission to feel how I feel. You're telling
me
you have all the permission to feel how you feel.
Right.
Now I have the permission to feel how I feel. That's what's nice about being the counselor, is a lot of times people expect me to know what to say and how to feel.
Right.
So it's kind of nice. I have my own choice.
Yeah.
But I extend that also to the person who's sitting with me and say, I don't have an expectation of how you should or shouldn't feel about your own situation.
Right.
And so being the listener, I think you can give all the permission and freedom in the world to that listener, and that gives them a sound mind to be a recipient in that. Because it is a conversation. It's not a monologue. It's a dialogue.
Right.
And usually in a group setting, you're setting a precedence. You know, the first person that says it, it can fall there, but the next person is truly the leader, if you will, because first person puts it out there, second person contributes, and then there's the domino effect.
That's right.
But if the second person doesn't contribute, it likely will stop, and that person is sort of
fizzles out.
Oh, that person was kind of weird. They just put it all out there.
And then you'll never share again, ever.
And to me, if you can get into one of those group situations, it's so helpful, because sometimes I'll have feelings, and I'll hear other people who have similar feelings, like, mm-hmm. we shared this experience, we feel about similarly, and I'll be like, oh, I'm not a lunatic.
That's right.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, like, I don't exist on this island by myself. There are other people who interpret this situation the same way. That makes me feel so much better.
Right.
Just to have somebody who understands what our group of people who understand what I'm going through, and they're going through the same thing.
Exactly.
It's like, it almost brings like a sense of relief.
Yes, that's a good word.
I would say.
It's funny, the continuum that brought me to, I told you how I went to Florida to go see my aunt, and I received this love from somebody that's in my family, and it felt so good to be a recipient instead of just a constant giver, you know, kind of the other end of the spectrum. And I went to see my counselor, the counselor that sees his counselor.
Yeah.
And I shared, you know, how I'm holding it together, and he looked at me and he's like, wait, you mean you're not perfect. You make mistakes. And he kind of laughed about it. And I was like, I think he's joking. I think he wants me to laugh. You know what I mean? And,
right. It's tough to laugh about
and
it.
And it was great. Just, it's so nice to be in company where you don't have to keep it all together.
Mm.
And it's in our circles, sometimes they can become very superficial. They can become very polished. And sometimes they can be just downright cutthroat.
Yeah.
You know? But it's just nice to be able to actually say what you want to say, mean what you mean, and not have to apologize for it. You know, you're not tearing somebody down. It's not this loaded, opinionated statement. It is, in a sense, you know, being vulnerable and bearing your soul.
Right.
And I think that's healing from shame.
And to me, if you're in a circle where you feel like you can't be vulnerable, you got to eject yourself from that circle.
What did you say?
If you're in a circle of people, you spend a considerable amount of time in a circle of people where you feel like you can't be vulnerable.
Can't. Okay.
Then you have to eject yourself from that circle.
Got you.
What you don't have is a circle of friends. You have a circle of acquaintances.
Right.
Or people you know through a certain activity. To me, that's a bad spot.
I agree with you.
You will end up in these places. It's part of life. But this can't be your main place.
No, and I would say spend as little time there as possible.
Right.
You know?
And the thing that's weird is you may even like the other people, right? And so, like, these aren't bad people. I don't dislike them. But the whatever it is that makes it okay, the group dynamic or whatever, that makes it okay to be vulnerable is not there.
Mm.
And if that is available to me some other place, the healthier place is the other one.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I find myself not able to tolerate situations like that much anymore. I think as I get older, I'm just like, I don't have time for this. Mm-hmm. I got to be with people who
that's
I
a
can
good point.
Be honest with, you know?
Valuing your time and upholding your values is so important. There's a self-care plan on my website that I created that will allow you to prioritize your values and the way that you spend your time. Because, you know, if you say no, you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to something else.
That's right.
No to something, you're saying yes to something. And we have a limited amount of time.
Sure. You know?
So absolutely. Prioritizing your values is, I think, such an awesome thing to do. Instead of just, I do it because it's expected. I do it because I'm responsible. And then we wear this badge, but we're resentful.
Yes.
We're exhausted.
You can get passive aggressive and manipulative.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I had a situation, you know, recently where somebody was heavily guilting me because there was a need they thought I would fulfill, well. And I did not, once the tactic became manipulative, I was very guarded and sensitive.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, not cool.
Yeah.
And there was another person involved in the conversation and he was hanging back. And I was like, I looked at the, you know, I made a joke. I said, what's with the high pressure sales? He's like, he's the closer who comes in at the end. I don't know he's the closer.
Uh-huh.
And this was not like a pyramid scheme. This was like, it's pretty ridiculous. But basically the other guy that was quiet, you know, he sent me an email the next day and said, listen, no pressure whatsoever.
Yeah.
Are you interested? And if you're not, it's not a problem. And I said no. And
that was
I knew.
Cool of him to give you the out.
As soon as they asked me, I called my wife and I was like, listen, here's the situation. We talked. I want another perspective.
Yeah.
And she said what she said. And I said, I'm going to say no.
Good.
Which is something I wouldn't have been able to do so easily 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But to say yes to that, I know, is to shut down the ability to do things that uphold my values.
Right.
And allow me to meet the needs of others in that space.
Yeah.
So that was a...
That's huge, Josh.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
Well, that's part of... Thank you. That's part of that self-acceptance, you know, where... You know, and that's part of, like, looking back. That's where I think is important as far as, like, the mirror we hold and the standard we set, the benchmarks. You talked about these imaginary benchmarks. Sometimes the best thing we can do is look back and, first of all, realize so much of the trials we've actually made it through. And, gosh, you remember when I used to dot, dot, dot? You remember
yes.
how bad I dot, dot, mm-hmm. dot? That's progress. I actually love to hear Michael's jujitsu stories because he's whatever's underneath modest. He does that false humility thing where he acts like
that's
he's
called
not
getting your ass. that's what's underneath modest.
He acts like he's not clever. You know, he's not good at it. But I understand he's progressing and improving and becoming more proficient in this because he's putting the time and energy into it.
I try.
If you go every day and you spend time in jiu-jitsu every day, you can't but help get better at it.
Yes.
Yeah. That looking back, I think, is really important. And that's one of the benefits, I think, of journaling, because every once in a while I'll read back, you know, I'll go far back and I'm just like, wow. You can't see the growth unless you go back far enough, you know?
Funny, you know, there's such this stigma of don't live in your past, but there's value in the past. Don't be anxious about the future.
Oh, yeah, I'm not living in it.
But
yeah.
There's benefits of thinking forward and
that's right.
being a steward of the future.
That's right.
And then the mindfulness of today.
Yes.
I think they can be taken and distorted, and yes, they can go down a wrong path, but there are such benefits of the beginning, you know, the before, the during, and the after.
I think that's a really good point. Good place to wrap it up, unless you guys have final thoughts you want to share.
No, thank you.
No.
So you can go and prioritize your values at Josh's website. That's joshneuer.com, and Neuer is spelled N-E-U-E-R. Josh, you're so awesome, and we love that you've been on this podcast, what, 5 times now?
I think this is 5.
Dude.
Thank you guys so
much. Number 5.
Much.
Thanks for being here, man.
Thank
you're
you
the
so
best,
much.
Josh.
All right. We'll catch you guys later.